Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you came by. I want to share with you right away something that came our way yesterday. I couldn't do the show yesterday morning because my husband, Big Spike, had a doctor's appointment, and it was actually with a doctor, not just for a treatment. He's been done with his treatments for quite a long time. So we went yesterday to the hematologist, and he got after, actually the journey has been a long one for him that started in the end of 2011. He had heart failure. Then he had carotid surgery on his neck. It was completely blocked. Then he had an aneurysm on his aorta, which was lined up with his kidneys. So a special customized stent had to be made and put in his aorta to close off the aneurysm and still give blood to his kidneys. And then he got cancer. So it's been a lifetime with him, 47 years. He's never been sick. And I mean that, never been sick. I mean, every now and then he'd catch a little something and sleep for 10 hours and wake up okay. So he got a clean bill of health yesterday. There is no cancer. There, everything else, the other doctor that we saw at the beginning of last week said that his scans look perfect for the stent that's in his aorta. Everything is good. So with all the yucky stuff that we talk about, all the bad news and more stuff that we're going to talk about today that's in our world, here's the truth. We're all still finding our way to survival. And I think at the end of the day, that's the most important part to remember. So I send out good wishes to all of you who are in a struggle, like my husband has been in. And don't give up, I guess, is the biggest, most important thing. And the best advice anybody can give to you is not to give up. So let's bring Shelley in because I have a lot of stuff I want to talk about today. Good morning, Shel.
Good morning, Renee. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing real good. Doing real good. Yeah, busy.
Pretty good
a lot
news
of family
about Spike, huh?
What?
Pretty good news about Spike, huh?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Doesn't surprise me, though, when, again, it's because of mental attitude and he always has that, you know, that fighting attitude. So, you know, when we talk about how our emotions play into healing, he always had that.
Yep. He just once he tells himself that it's his responsibility to get himself into a better place, he just seems to be able to do it. So, I posted a picture of him yesterday. His appetite is back, too, and that's kind of funny because for months now I've been fighting with him, getting upset because he wouldn't even eat a scrambled egg. And forget meat or anything like that. He didn't eat any of that anyway, but he couldn't eat anything. If I steamed something like a broccoli or something like that, he could have two bites of it because he could chew it, but then it tasted terrible. So chemo and radiation do a really good job on destroying everything else along with the cancer. So it's been a long road back, but now he's like starving all the time. I mean, what's to eat, Reen? I'm like, God, for the past 6 months I prayed to hear you say that. Now you're driving me nuts. So he is in a good place. He's put on 21 pounds.
Wow. Yeah, that's higher
yep.
than we announced last time on the show, so it's continuing. That's
yep.
wonderful.
Yep. He weighed in yesterday at 161.
Is he aware of it? Does he feel any more physical strength? Is he aware that he's gaining weight?
Shell, four times a day now, he goes out with Chewbacca, our dog, and walks him all over the park, all over the park. So there are still some drawbacks. His legs get weak, and he's figured out things to do to help alleviate some of that. His sleep pattern is atrocious now. I mean, you know, I go to bed, and he comes to bed, and then he gets up, and then he comes back to bed, then he gets up. A lot of things, I think, go with our age, too. But his sleep pattern, I'm hoping we can get back to, you know, some kind of regularity. But other than that, yeah, he's, I mean, I can take him shopping with me, you know, me at Walmart or BJ's or one of those places. I'm in there for an hour and a half walking around. And as small a time as 1 month ago, he had to sit down when I was in any of those stores and wait for me. So it's been pretty remarkable, the recovery. So, but I did a little bit more research, and I have a lot of things that I want to touch on. But I think to start the groundwork for some of the other stories that I've been given in the last couple of days, I think that we should go to the Stephen Collins story, because okay. I think that the fact that we all get fooled by people's, how do I want to put this? Who people pretend to be is what's the scariest thing for me. And I remember being scared by that when I was in my 20s, realizing that people are often not what they seem. The man, I mean, you know, like all the evangelists and all these people that get up there and talk about saving yourself and about God and how God wants you to be this, God wants you to be that. And then a month later you find out that they've been having an affair with their secretary and they beat their wife. And it shocked me in my 20s. I was so naive that I thought people were who they said they were.
Yeah.
I know that's pretty dumb, but I thought that. Because that's who I am. I am who I say I am. And I really try hard to only keep those kind of people in my life. But the older I get, the more I realize that the old story about a wolf in sheep's clothing is pretty prevalent in our society today. So when I looked up the story of Steve Collins, of course, I found some things that I'd already heard on the news, and it's disheartening because he had such a lovely persona, right? I mean, who didn't like him?
I know.
On the
actor portrayed the character so believably that you actually connect the character with him, with the actor himself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. But there was something about the way he smiles and the sincerity in his appearance and the way he can look at people. Don't you think that's scary, Shell? I mean, you know, I go back to, you know, like movies that we've watched. You and I, Silence of the Lambs is one of the scariest, grossest movies I've ever watched. And yet, this man, you and I fell in love with. We all fell in love with at Hippocrates, right? But he's almost like, this is Anthony Hopkins, but he is almost childlike in his friendships. But it also taught me that maybe that's why he could get so characterized, if you will. He could pretend to be anything he wants to be for the movie. But in real life, I've never met anybody sweeter or more genuinely loving. I mean, it was nothing for him. We were all told we had to be, you know, respectful, call him a different name and all this kind of stuff. He walked into my office, big as life, around the side of my desk, hugged me and said, "I'm Tony. I've heard all kinds of good things about you." I mean, so everything that I'd been told before he got there just went down the drain, you know. I mean, he was just awesome. So when so there are some out there. I guess the point I'm making with that story about Anthony Hopkins is that there are some out there that just sink into their character. So he always plays, you know, kind of off the wall characters, although some of his movies were about normal, good people, but a lot of them weren't. And then we have somebody like Stephen Collins, who portrays a loving family man, who takes in children and does this and does that. And we all believed him. And in essence, he was taking advantage of some of the kids he was working with. That just grosses me out. So here's what happened
in the
with
actor,
him and what
did,
brought...
Just to interject something here. I've seen that actor play very sinister roles. And I remember the first time I ever saw it was on the Law and Order episode. Mm-hmm. And he played a very, very creepy person. And it was such a departure from his role as the minister father on Seventh Heaven that it put me off a little bit the first time I ever saw him playing a role like that. Now, obviously, actors, you know, at one time used to get typecast. They don't anymore. So you have an actor playing an angelic role in one movie and then an evil role in another movie, and that's what actors are, you know. But I'll never forget the first time I saw him playing a bad guy. It felt uncomfortable because in my head he was this preacher dad on Seventh Heaven to me, and it was like I didn't want him to be the bad guy, and he turned out to be a really rotten person in this Law and Order episode, you know. So it is funny how we connect actors and actresses with the characters they play.
Well, and I mean, you know, that happens to us in real life. You know, we meet somebody on a bad note one day or at a gathering or something, and they're in a bad place, and you think, oh, my God, I'm never going around her or him again. What a jerk, or what a this, or what a that. And then you have an opportunity to meet them on a day when they're not under some kind of duress, and you see that they're somebody that you can bond with, that you can be friends with. I mean, that happens to us all the time. But I think celebrities are supposed to... there's going to be a lot of people rolling their eyes when I say this, but they really should be people that monitor themselves as though they're in, you know, in view of everybody all the time. I'm sorry, and I know that those are big shoes to fill. This morning they showed the First Lady with a turnip in her hand. I don't know where this came from or what it's about, but they are just just making so much fun of her because she's going turnip and then bobbing her head around, turn up and bobbing her head around with a turnip in her hand. And I'm like, what the hell is that for? To make us think she's an idiot? What is that for? And why are you showing it? And what's the purpose of it? You know, so a lot of it you have to always take with a grain of salt. And you have to think to yourself, you know, once you're in the purview of all the public, you're up for any kind of gossip, ridicule, anything anybody can do to knock you off your pedestal, they will do. And that's a very sad commentary for the human race, but it's very, very true. If you are in a place that other people covet or desire or anything, the second you do anything, you know, they're right there. Instead of to help you back up on the pedestal, to stomp all over you. And I hate that about us. And we're all guilty of that in one way or another. So when I first heard this story about Stephen Collins, I was like, oh, geez, now, you know, he probably had his arm around some girl and somebody saw him and started some gossip and who knows. But as it works out, this is an actual confession that they have on tape. And so, you know, it is what it is. Of the many stories I read, this one says, as confessions go, it's persuasive and damning. Listen to the tape. The admission is stunning. If it is the voice of actor Stephen Collins admitting on a secret tape recording to molesting three young girls in both California and New York, he is in serious criminal jeopardy in both jurisdictions. But there are copious legal obstacles for prosecutors if they decide to charge the star of the hit television series Seventh Heaven, who ironically portrayed a moralizing pastor who counsels children. One season was devoted to teaching young people to abstain from premarital sex. Yep, that's irony. Collins is already in court battling his estranged wife, actress Faye Grant, in a nasty divorce case. The court of public opinion can be equally ugly. Reportedly, Collins has been canned from an upcoming film role and has resigned from the national board of the Screen Actors Guild. His future in front of camera may depend on whether he ends up behind bars. So what will happen? Can Collins be prosecuted for something he allegedly did many years ago, perhaps decades ago? Well, I don't know if they answered this completely, but it would seem like he could be. Let's begin with the voice heard on the tape. Authenticating it should be easy. There would have been two witnesses present at the time of this alleged confession during a visit to a therapist. Either one or both of those individuals could verify it was Collins who was speaking. Normally, those kind of things are private and considered, privileged information, especially if you're talking to a therapist. It wasn't the therapist who breached the privilege, though. It was the actor's wife. She can do so even if she was a participant in the couple's counseling. Moreover, there is no therapist-patient privilege that protects what is heard on the tape recording. Both New York and California have strict laws that impose an affirmative duty on therapists who report to authorities any evidence of child abuse. Therapists must also report any patient who might pose a danger to others, including children. So forget any principles of confidentiality because they're no longer admissible. But there's an issue about whether or not the tape is admissible evidence in a court of law. The recording reportedly occurred in California, which is regarded as an all-party state. That means under law, all parties to the conversation must have knowledge of the recording and give consent in advance. Collins, of course, didn't. However, there is a critical caveat. If Collins was thought to be involved in criminal activity, the conversation can be recorded without consent in order to collect evidence of the suspected crime. That scenario would seem to apply here. Thus, the tape is admissible in a California courtroom.
Wow.
So, statute of limitations, once somebody reaches the age of 18, or reports the crime to law enforcement, can be, whichever one occurs first, that can be utilized. That's when the clock begins to tick. Prosecutors have 5 years within which to bring charges for first and second degree sexual assault against a child, but only 2 years of sexual misconduct. Forcible touching and sexual abuse. At this point, we don't know the precise timing of events or what kind of abuse may have happened to the girls. If too much time has elapsed, the statute of limitations will have run and no prosecution can be had. So,
What is Collins saying, though? Is anything in any of the articles saying that he's not saying that's his confession? Is he denying it, or?
I don't think he's denying it, not that I've seen that written anywhere, but what I am seeing is that he stepped down from everything he's doing. I mean,
I don't think he stepped down. I think he was dismissed from everything he's doing. I think he stepped down willingly. Did he step down willingly? Did he resign, or was he made to step down?
Well, it just says that he's not going to participate in the Actors Guild, and he stepped down from an upcoming film role. But it says he's resigned from these things. It doesn't say that he was told to resign or was fired. He says that he stepped down. And that may just be out of the limelight in the hopes. I mean, if I'm thinking like him, and say I don't know, you know, sometimes guilt comes in variable dosages. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you feel like, well, you know, there was some extenuating circumstances and this happened and that happened and I probably would never do that again, but it just led to this and led to that and I don't know what I was thinking, that kind of a deal. So maybe he's feeling like if he pulls himself out of the limelight, then this will go away. And like even though I find all this, these time elements to be a little bit confusing and pretty iffy, maybe that has something to do with it. And I'm sure he has great legal representation, aren't you?
Yeah, sure. One thing that I find that's sad in all this, and it's because of how we connect an actor with the characters they play, is that I used to watch Seventh Heaven all the time. You know, I mean, I haven't watched it in years, but when it was airing, I watched it all the time. I loved the show. I just thought it was very uplifting, and I liked the moral message and things like that. And now, you know, it's off the air now, but it reruns on several stations, and now they've removed the reruns from the stations now because of all this. And I think that's a shame. Because the message that came out in the show, the good things that it showed about the interactions between people and how to, even like some of the worst situations would get turned around and everybody would be okay, that type of thing, those messages are still uplifting. But now because they're tainted by, you know, by this scandal, now that show is not going to be seen. You know, the people that used to watch it and feel good afterwards and stuff like that, now they're not going to be able to see the show, at least for now. I don't know if they'll eventually put it back on when all the attention dies down, but for right now, they're not airing reruns of the show anymore.
Hmm. Well, I imagine the reason for that is to protect other people's butts. I imagine that different studios, different contracts that would be jeopardized have something to do with that, because things like a syndicated program like Seventh Heaven probably has lots of hands in the stew, so to speak. So I would imagine that a lot of that got stopped dead in its tracks to protect all the other people. This one thing that I found, well, the recording went viral last week, so a lot of people have listened to it. I have not. I did find it and didn't take the time to listen to it. I just read everything because I didn't want to hear his voice and make my own assumptions. You know how I am. I feel like if I hear somebody telling me a story, I have a tendency to make my own judgment call on it, whether or not I believe them or not. And I didn't want to do that with this. I just wanted to give the facts and let people understand that this kind of thing is out there. And, of course, when we're trying to teach our kids, and what our show started out to be all about, is to be good leaders. And sadly, every minute of every day, another adult, a grown-up, who should always know better, doesn't. You know, I mean, and then everybody wonders why 11-year-olds are pregnant or, you know, having oral sex because they know they can't get pregnant, or all the other things that we know kids are doing today, or you know, being mean to somebody or any of these things. I mean, God shall. You know, it's almost like the book of turning into adults is X-rated now.
Yep.
So why do we expect something different from kids? That's what gets me so annoyed, and I'm one of them. I don't not accept some of this responsibility myself. But again, you know, if we're getting to a point in time where we're supposed to be trying to make things better or make the kind of changes that are going to bring about a better, I mean, every time I envision little kids, and I don't even mean, I mean really little, I mean like 2-3 years old, that little, because at 5, things have already changed. At 6 and 7, they've changed a lot. At 8, 9, and 10, you don't know what you might be getting yourself into. And certainly over 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 is scary as hell. So, but if you watch them at 2 and 3, they love each other. They share. They hand each other their baby bottles. It's wonderful. They sit mm-hmm. beside each other and hold each other up or hug each other. There's real love, there's real consideration, there's real everything. And it changes so damn fast that there's nowhere in between where even if you wanted to, you can interject something that's going to keep them there because you can't. So now you got stories like this coming around. I mean, last night, Mikey called me twice. Graham, we've all been sitting here looking on YouTube and stuff like that, and we wanted to tell you about two stories you got to talk about on the show. And we will talk about them, but one of them is horrendous. I don't have all the facts, so I'm not going to share it today. But again, it's about kids, but it's due to the actions of adults.
Wow.
So, and it kind of makes me sick. This one story that they told me. So now you got this, and this could be, I mean, if I just assess what I've read, like I said, and that didn't listen to the tape and hear voices and all that kind of stuff, from an adult point of view, and I am an adult on some days, not all days, but most of my days I'm an adult, this is a fight between a husband and wife. A fight where there's probably homes and money, you know, out there waiting to be, you know, split up. So she started this, the wife. Does she have a valid reason for starting it? Maybe. But if it started in 1984 and he's such a lech, why is she still married to him, Shell?
Right. Well, yes, yeah, right? I read a... One of the articles I read said that she's denying that she's the one who leaked it, that she's saying it didn't come from her, and that in the divorce agreement that he agreed to continue paying her so that she wouldn't release it. So in my head, I'm like, okay, well, here you know that this man is doing this. So I'm having an issue with that article, because if that's true, then she's not really looking out for anybody. You know, she's just looking to have ammunition for the divorce. So I'm not sure if she is the one who leaked it based on this article I read 2 days ago. Now, maybe that's been updated mm-hmm. since. But she on that article, she was denying that she was the one that leaked the recording. So I don't know who else could have leaked the recording. And then the other thing is that I'm wondering, and that was he was seeing a therapist because of this, then that means at some point, maybe while he was making the Seventh Heaven show, maybe he started battling with his demons. Maybe he was drawn to the character in that show because it allowed him to start tapping into a more moral way of playing. A lot of times, that's what happens to people. If you're battling something, you're either drawn more into it or you're drawn into a way out of it. And maybe portraying the father on that show was a way for him to kind of redeem himself somehow. I don't know if this is something that's still ongoing or if this is a demon from his past that he was going to a psychologist to stop. You know, he recognized it wasn't okay and he didn't want to do it anymore. You know, I'm not reading full stories as to what his comments are. What we're reading is people on the outside looking in and evaluating the tape, you know. But I want to hear what he has to say because there's a couple of schools of thought here. If he's still conducting this activity today and he recognizes it's wrong and he's seeing a therapist, then that really is irresponsible on the therapist because the therapist should have reported him. Like you said, they have a responsibility, and at that point when you're talking about a child being at jeopardy, you know, confidentiality goes out the window. You know, if somebody that has anger issues tells a therapist that they're going to kill somebody, they can't keep that to themselves. They have to report that, you know. There are certain things that once somebody's divulged something to a therapist, they have a duty to protect innocent people against violence or criminal acts. So there are certain things that then go outside the client privilege, you know, the patient privilege. But what I'm thinking about is because there's nothing that says that there's been anything currently, and I think it's irresponsible for somebody to leak this now just to damage his reputation if, in fact, and I'm only saying this is conditional, if, in fact, he went to therapy to recover from this, to get control of it because he recognized it was wrong, and now he's, you know, and so he tried to make good with his life, portray this character that was moralistic. You know, that could have been part of therapy for them. That could have been a way for him to get in a good place and show people how to act in a responsible way, you know. So, you know, there could be a lighter side to this man that is now being dragged through the mud because this tape was leaked. If the conduct is happening now, then shame on everybody that knew it was going on since 1984 and didn't do anything to bring this man to justice. But this, if this is really something from his past and he got it under control, then I say shame on the people that leaked this now and what was their purpose after all this time.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of different reactions to this story, not knowing what the real story is.
Exactly. Well, and that's the whole... I mean, isn't that why people start rumors, is so that it can blossom into anything, into other people's imagination without, you know, a lot. How many people are going to pursue whether, most people will just make assumptions and it doesn't affect them in any personal way, but now there's probably millions of people out there that think he's a sicko, and they could be right, they could be wrong. One of these things, I wanted to share this real quick because then I want to talk about some of the other people that are out there, movers and shakers, who have been accused of things and they just get, you know, forgotten about. Grant and Collins are battling over a $14 million divorce case. Those close to Collins claiming his wife is making up assertions in order to make him look even worse. For example, Grant was For example, Grant has also supposedly sent Collins an email in which she recounts his relief over the couple welcoming a daughter into the world because Collins wouldn't have been able to resist having oral sex with a son. In regard to this new allegation of sexual molestation, a source connected to Collins tells this reporter, "The notion that Stephen used his role on Seventh Heaven for any improper purpose is completely false and just another example of Faye fabricating a story to gain an advantage in the divorce proceedings." First of all, this comment, does this sound like an adult, Shell? Because Collins wouldn't have been able to resist having oral sex with his son. Does that sound like an adult, or does that sound like somebody who's got a screw loose? I mean, even if she believes it, what kind of a statement is that? I mean, even if she believes that her husband likes little boys, and none of this, you don't, I mean, so far, anything that I've read, it just says child stars.
And the accounts I read up to this point were with little girls. Now they're saying now she's saying her son. I mean, yeah, it sounds like it was a comment made strictly for shock effect.
Yes, of course. Of course. And that's the whole idea, you know, and to set everybody's minds spinning. And because human beings almost
because
prefer...
Because it's an excessively disturbing image.
Yes. That's the deal. And of course, if he steps out of the limelight for a while and settles with her in some way that makes her happy, this will probably go away. And if it's true, that's not right. But if it isn't true, it'll be something that he's got to keep swept under the carpet for the rest of his life. Look at everything. When I looked up different stars, of course, everybody knows about Woody Allen. Woody Allen is a very eclectic person. His movies, his stories, his own acting career is, to say the least, different, kind of, I don't know, funky, off-the-wall kind of entertainment. People either love him or think he's an idiot.
That's right.
You know, there's nothing in between. Now, him, this past Sunday, Ronan Farrow, who is Mia Farrow's child, took to Twitter, in no uncertain terms, called out his father, Woody Allen, as a pedophile. Allen, you may recall, is married to his ex-wife's adopted daughter, in a relationship that, when it became public, was universally acknowledged as creepy, but generally accepted because it wasn't illegal. Good standard to have. Now Ronan has brought to light again accusations from Mia Farrow's biological daughter, who accused Allen way back then of molesting her as a child. And all of that was literally, you know, just tossed around like it was just, you know, fodder for media. And nothing ever happened to Woody Allen. Nothing. Then there's this dude, I don't even know him, never heard about it. People with no knowledge of the situation will debate this endlessly. Is he guilty or is he innocent? You'll see the name with people like R. Kelly, whose fans have decided are good enough at their art and still on the streets and not in prison, therefore are good people. He's a rap star. I'd stake everything I own, but of course no one can or will take that bet. Is he as bad as Woody Allen? The family all seem to think so, but they're not alone in the world of celebrity. Sexual assault, indecent exposure, and more are damn near par for the course in Hollywood, or at least the accusations are. Here's a handful more that you may have forgotten about. Jeffrey Jones. You know who Jeffrey Jones is?
Well, the name is familiar, but no, I don't.
He's like a bit actor. He was the principal in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Right, and he was one of the people that moved into Beetlejuice's house. Remember him?
Right.
He played a great scumbag, and with good reason. He is kind of a scumbag. Back in 2002, Jones was arrested for soliciting a 14-year-old boy to pose for nude, sexually explicit pictures. He was also found to be in possession of child pornography. Basically, he went from being the hilarious principal in Ferris Bueller to the creepy monster from Ferris Bueller. Jones pled no contest to the charges and is now a registered sex offender for life. He settled a civil case with his victim and in 2010 was put on additional 3 years probation for not updating his sexual offender registration. Mike Tyson is another one. That has happened to him. He was sentenced to 6 years in prison after being found guilty of the rape of an 18-year-old girl, Desiree Washington. To this day, Tyson maintains his innocence, citing evidence that his lawyer presented on appeal that his victim had at least once falsely accused a man of rape in the past. The appeal failed and Tyson was convicted. He served 3 years of a 6-year sentence. Britney Spears In 2010, Fernando Flores, a one-time bodyguard for Britney Spears, sued his former employer for sexual harassment. Flores claimed in his suit that Spears repeatedly flashed him by doing things like intentionally dropping a cigarette lighter in front of him and bending over to pick it up, exposing her genitals to him. She settled out of court. John Travolta, I mean, he's just been in the news here recently for all these things that are, you know, coming out of nowhere. He's had a real run of sexual harassment and assault claims filed against him since way back in the days of Greece. 2012, Travolta was sued by not one but two massage therapists who alleged Travolta tried to coerce them into sexual situations. They just pay these people. Then sports stars, and of course sports stars, all the stories about them are not just about sexual abuse, but often about abuse, period. Marilyn Manson, who I always thought was kind of scary anyway, one-time goth poster boy and later glam rock star, found himself on the receiving end of a complaint after a show in 2001 when he decided to put one of the stage security guards in a headlock with his legs while wearing a thong. And he got in trouble for sexual assault with that, and a judge tossed it out, and both sides came to a settlement, which means that means Marilyn Manson paid somebody again. Pee Wee Herman got in trouble for masturbating in a theater.
Yeah, I remember.
And it pretty much canceled his career. Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see him now on, you know, different guest spots and stuff like that, but it pretty much canceled his career. Tupac Shakur, still renowned as a great poet of rap, it's often forgotten that in life, Tupac wasn't always the nicest guy, having a history of assault before being accused of rape in 1993. Shakur maintained his innocence in the case and noted he'd been with the same woman consensually days before. However, she alleged he and his entourage then raped her in a hotel room. The charge, which he was found not guilty of, along with several others. He was, however, found guilty of sexual abuse and sentenced to 1.5 to 4.5 years in prison. And then, of course, the most infamous one is Michael Jackson. And Michael Jackson, in essence, just had rumors swarming all around him. But there were never any real bona fide recorded accusations. Do you know that? Did you know that?
Well, actually, I actually have information after that whole situation that said that the prosecutors and everybody involved behind the scenes knew that the accusations were not true. The people that accused Michael Jackson of sexual abuse were professional litigators. They were looking for a big payday. They had attempted to sue a couple other famous people. I mean, this was all recorded, and they believed that they took their child over there so that they could then coach him later on, because they said that the kid's statements were very inconsistent, that he appeared to have been coached to say certain things, and that it was never substantiated, and yet the media never aired that part of it. That they would put a little blurb here and a little blurb there. But it was very frustrating to the prosecutors that they ran with all the rumors, shocking headlines, but only in the fine print did they say anything negative about the people suing Michael. And here, they didn't ruin his career because he had such a following and people that just simply didn't believe it. But Michael Jackson was emotionally damaged by all the sitcom. I mean, there were a lot of sitcoms out there that would make jokes about the fact that Michael had this tendency, and he didn't find it funny because it attacked his character and because he had such a love for children. He was childlike himself. That's what was so ridiculous about this. He was such a child himself that when he was around children, he barely became sexual in his own relationships. You know, to sort of mm-hmm. think of him being sexual with children was just utterly ridiculous, because he was very backwards in that way. He was very immature in that way, very childlike. He was a very unsexual person, because you could see in some of his videos where he was portraying sexual, and it was like a child portraying what they would think an adult would act like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot about Michael's psychology came out after his death. And a lot of this, some of the people that were involved behind the scenes were enraged, and I guess that's why they made the documentary that I watched, because they said that they couldn't get the media to print some of these stories while it was all going on, and if they had, it might have taken some of the sting out of it, but it wasn't as shocking. It was better for ratings, better to sell newspapers, to keep this hype going like there was something bad that happened here. Meanwhile, Michael was the victim, not his supposed victims. He never really, everybody behind the scenes, that's why he had such staunch supporters. I mean, think of some of the actors and actresses that stood by him. They knew he was innocent, you know, and they didn't care about their careers or anything. They were just appalled that this turned into such a three-ring circus for so long. So when you get somebody that's that wealthy, they draw these people out from the woodwork. And once it's out there, if the media doesn't handle both sides of the story effectively, then you're going to get public opinion swayed in one way. And there's a lot of people today that still think that Michael Jackson was a pedophile, and he never was.
Well, I wish I could say that with the same kind of conviction that you say it with. It's what I want to believe, for sure. I've always felt like...
I have a documentary. I'll give it to you. Watch it. They have all the facts on there. It was very well done. I wish they would play it more. They played it a few times, so I'm sure a lot of people know it. But I actually bought it. I have it on a VHS tape. But it was very well put together, very fact.
My instinct.
And things like that.
Mm-hmm. My instinct.
And they said a lot of the facts that have cleared Mike, for whatever reason, were never aired by the media.
Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't as hyped up and everything. But I also think that he wasn't normal. And what is normal? That's up for debate as
eccentric.
Well.
He was eccentric. He was absolutely eccentric.
He was sad, Shelley. There was something in him that made him sad. That's why he was such an amazing artist. And that's why he would relentlessly spend hours and hours doing dance routines until he perfected them. That's why he had all of those kind of things, because there was an innate sadness in him that I saw a lot. And when you said something just now, I've thought about that so many times. Who are the people that surrounded him? Oprah Winfrey, Elizabeth Taylor, all these women who were maternal at heart, and they saw the same
Anna
kind
Ross.
Of sadness, that I saw, and they wanted to protect him because they knew, and I believe that he wasn't enticing young boys into his boudoir. I believe that for sure, but I also believe that he did things that wouldn't be acceptable to other people because he was like him carrying around the monkey all those years. What was the monkey's name?
I don't remember
that he had a chimp, I think it was a chimpanzee, that he was mm-hmm. so attached to. He needed, later years, you see stories about his mother, Catherine, about his father, Joe. They were horrible people. By
mm-hmm.
all accounts, and the other kids moved up and moved on. But Michael, at such an early age, was the star, was the breadwinner, was the everything, and he felt that responsibility. So those years that I just mentioned a few minutes ago that are the perfect ones, I think he didn't get. I don't think he got any of those kind of years. So, there's a lot of stuff about him. I don't believe he was molesting little boys. But I do believe that he wasn't okay. I do believe that. And I can understand why people like Elizabeth Taylor and Oprah Winfrey, and there was many. Didn't Liza Minnelli, and weren't there, there were a lot of female, very, very important women who'd been through their own strife many, many times, who were drawn to Michael.
Mm-hmm. Because
really
he was
drawn
very,
to him.
He was very sweet and innocent. He was very childlike. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's
very,
like everybody
very
that
childlike.
Dealt with him described him. Very childlike. And he did have male friends. The guy who produced the Thriller video said that working with Michael was the most incredible experience. He said, because here you have this powerhouse talent. He said Michael was probably one of the most naturally gifted talents he had ever come across. And he said, and he was almost shy about it. He said he was really uncomfortable with praise and things like that. He said he was very shy, very unassuming about his talent. You know, he would not, he would walk in a room and he would almost be embarrassed when people would get excited to see him. He said, and then the minute he got out there on the stage, he said this other persona would take over. The confidence, the talent would just burst out of him, almost like he couldn't control it. And then the minute the scene was over, the minute he wasn't dancing anymore, then he'd become this shy, childlike person again. You know, and he said it was just his demeanor. And he says, and that's why people loved him, because he was so sweet and innocent and very, very genuine. And he was one of the people that talked on this documentary about his character and how it was basically assassinated during that whole thing and what a tragedy it all was. Because anybody that knew Michael knew that it was absolutely 100% impossible, and that's why, you know, a lot of times when stuff like this hits the fan, you see who your friends are because people start dropping like flies. That never happened to Michael Jackson. The people closest to him stayed there. You know, he didn't have hordes of people backing away from him. He had hordes of people saying, you know, I don't care what these rumors say. It can't possibly be true. You don't know Michael, you know. So definitely a very, very eccentric individual. You know, and a lot of times wealth does that to you. He had the money to do things that a lot of us would only dream about. If other people had the type of wealth he did, you'd see a lot more eccentric people, because all of a sudden you can make your dreams come true, and you put an amusement park in your backyard, and you build, you know, you do things like that when you have that kind of money, you know.
Well, especially when you feel like you got cheated out of your childhood, you know, especially when you feel like you missed something. You really missed something. One of my cousins, one of my cousins posted pictures of my dad and my mom and my mom's brother and my parents and their brothers and sisters and stuff like that on Facebook last week. And I looked at the pictures and I said, it looks like they're, you know, discussing all kinds of stuff. And my cousin Sherry said, don't you remember having a lot of fun when we were kids? And I said, you know, I haven't thought about that in a long time, because my mind is always about what's going on in the moment. But you're right. Our parents loved to dance. My mother and father were great jitterbuggers. Everybody loved to sing. My mom's two brothers and one sister sang very well. And we did. We laughed a lot. We had fun a lot. Swimming, picking strawberries. I had a good childhood because of those people. And I think that if you don't have some of that in your life, the rest of your life kind of gets screwed up. So I think you need that time of just being a kid and everybody else is in charge and you can still have fun, I think is important. And when you see somebody like Michael Jackson, there's been a few. Look at Macaulay Culkin. I mean, he reached stardom overnight, and look how messed up he is now. See, everybody goes, you know, but it's all about taking away their childhood, Shelley. I swear to God, it has to be that. Because if you look, Judy Garland, there's another one, reached stardom at such an early age, and then after that, she just never, you know, It never got as great as that again. And there was nothing to remember, no good times to remember.
Well,
if you look around,
I read some reports about Judy Garland, and her issue was that she had such a drive to be an actress, but she suffered from severe stage fright, which was odd that she, on one hand, she had the drive to be an actress, and on the other hand, she was terrified to get in front of the camera, and she ended up becoming an alcoholic, and they said that she would have to drink before going out on stage and stuff like this, and it just overwhelmed her. It was almost like she was living two lives. She had a need to be there and a fear of it at the same time. So a lot of her angst came from that. But, you know, because she did play some wonderful roles, and she was a wonderful actress, especially in her childhood role on Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she could never combat that duality in her. And, you know, today she probably would have been diagnosed. I don't know that she was ever actually diagnosed. She just self-medicated.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was that era, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Did you by any chance catch the show about Superman? About the movie about Superman, about George Reeves.
Right.
Not his name, George Reeves.
No, but I knew some of the story. But no, I didn't watch the movie about that.
Mm-hmm. But that's a perfect movie about the transition to what the public wants you to be versus what you think you are. Sometimes is a big, you know, is a big, I don't know, cut in your suit of armor. And makes you start wondering who it is you really are. One of the actresses that I think about a lot, who I think has survived, I won't be able to think of her name. She was one of the angels, Drew Barrymore. Drew Barrymore overcame lots of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we have almost been privy to the transition from the little girl to the screwed up teenager. I mean, I read a story about her 20 years ago, about her at age 9 going to parties and doing cocaine and everything with all the big movie stars, because that's what everybody was doing, and she was a part of that entourage, so she did it. But she made it through it. I hope. You don't read anything really traumatic about her. Of course, we would never know because we don't know her personally. But as far as the public is concerned, she's been able to make that transition from that child star to all those bumpy years. And then you have Lindsay Lohan, who didn't, or Britney Spears, who didn't. A lot of them. As a matter of fact, I read an article by somebody who is an older star who said she would never let her children be in show business, that it's a grown-up world and kids don't belong there.
Well, I don't think
kids
belong there. I think kids belong there with appropriate support.
Leadership.
Right. So they have, you know, the parents have to stay involved, make sure the manager isn't giving the kids the wrong advice, like telling Britney, you know, Miley Cyrus to go out and make a sexual video because she has too clean of a persona. I mean, what's wrong with that? I think it would have been wonderful if she had maintained that innocent persona, because she would have been a great role model for girls, that it's okay to be squeaky clean. What's wrong with that? I happen to like squeaky clean myself.
Me too.
And even when I was younger,
you don't
I liked
it. You don't want to make it holier than thou, but you do want to make it normal with, you know, with all the normal things that happen. Yeah, what they did to her was atrocious. Atrocious.
Right. But so the whole thing is that there tends to be a thing that if you're squeaky clean, it's either number one, not real, or number two, that that you don't know how to have fun. Well, I was squeaky clean when I was younger. I didn't get involved in a lot of stuff that my friends did, but I wasn't holier than thou. I still did things with my friends, but I maintained myself, and I liked living like that because my life was simpler. My friends were always like getting in and out of situations, and I wasn't. I liked being the way I was.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I appreciate that when I see it in other young role models.
Mhm. Me too. Well, we're out of time, but we'll be back tomorrow, everybody. Go out and have a great, great day. It is hump day, so we're on the other side of this week. Everybody, have a good one. God bless. We're supposed to get chilly tonight. That'll be fun, in the 60s. So have a good one, everybody. God bless. Bye-bye. Thanks, Shel. See you later.
Thanks, Rain. Have a wonderful day, everyone. We'll talk to you in the morning.